This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Today, I have two great guests. The first one is Laura Sassy. I think I pronounced that right. Laura, are you there?
Yes, I am, and you pronounced it perfectly.
Okay, well, I like that name, Sassy.
Thank you.
At one point in my life, it was sort of my nickname. I was Sassy.
There you go.
So I don't know if you are, but I love that word anyway. So I'm so glad I was able to get you on the program before Christmas because, of course, I want to talk to you about your lovely book, Goodnight Manger. And of course, I've read some of your other books. And as always, you have a wonderful, wonderful way with words. And of course, these are picture books for children, beautifully illustrated, by the way. And I just wanted to talk to you and promote this book. And I hope that people will, if they're looking for a nice gift for children for Christmas, this is an ideal gift.
All right.
So tell us.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great. Well, tell us a little bit. I know that, of course, you've written quite a few books, including I know Goodnight Ark, which was I remember particularly that one because you're rhyming. You have an excellent way of rhyming. You know, sometimes rhyming it's difficult to make it natural. And you're fantastic at it. Now, in Goodnight Manger, again, you have it's beautifully done. Tell us how you got the idea for Goodnight Manger. Of course, it's a the story of Jesus's birth, but in a slightly different way from the normal.
All right. Well, I have two children, and they're now ages 11 and 15. But when my daughter was three, she used to like to play with the nativity that we still take out every Christmas. And I let them play with it because I thought it was a good way for them to connect with the story of Christmas and sort of understand who the angels and the shepherds, who the different figures were in the Christmas story. And she would do is she would take the baby Jesus out of the manger and she would put him in her little hand and he would be crying. And she would say, "Oh, don't cry, baby Jesus. It's okay. Don't cry." And then she'd give him a pretend bottle and then she'd rock him and sing him a lullaby and then she'd put him back in the nativity in the manger and she'd say to me, "Shh, Mommy. Baby, be quiet. Baby Jesus is sleeping." And I had never really thought of baby, before watching her play that, I'd never really thought of baby Jesus as crying because he doesn't typically cry in the songs we sing about him. And certainly when you read the scriptural passage, there's no mention of him crying. But he was God's son sent to earth in the humble form of a baby, and babies cry. And he must have cried in what must have been a noisy stable, perhaps a little bit smelly, with the animals. And so I just, that was the inspiration behind the story. And I also thought it was a good way for little ones to be able to connect to the story, because little ones can, of course, relate to, if they have little brothers or sisters, the babies crying. And parents, too. We all know how difficult it can be to put an overtired child to sleep. So those are my inspiration points.
Well, I think as I said, you have a lovely way with words. And one of the phrases, and I know that people have commented on it, is it's that mama's frantic in a fizzy, who knew stables were so busy? And it's true. It's no one ever thinks about it in that term. You know that. Yeah, it was a busy place. A lot of things are going on, and so I think it was a very cute idea that you came out with to make it in a way you kept the holiness of the event, but still with the human side, so that people understand you know.
Exactly, and a little bit of humor to appeal to the little ones.
Exactly. Well, now, of course, you have, we were very lucky that you have a fantastic illustrator. The illustrations are beautiful in the book.
Yes.
And, you know, I know that, of course, it's your publisher is Zonder Kids, right? And
yes.
And they do such very fine books. I mean, they're really the kind of books that you, once you get them, you want to keep them because they are just lovely to look at, the kind of books that high quality publishers.
Absolutely, very much so. And when they accepted Goodnight Arc, which was my first book, I didn't know when they accepted it who the illustrator was going to be. So when I found out that Jane Chapman had agreed to illustrate first Goodnight Arc and now Goodnight Manger, I was absolutely thrilled. Jane Chapman is from Great Britain, and she's published, illustrated over 100 books. So I knew her from reading picture books to my own children when they were little because she's very well known for the Karma Wilson's Bear Snores On series. So I knew that she just I knew from those books how she fills her pages with color, and she just has a charming way of capturing expressions in the animals, and the donkey and the hen and the rooster and the sheep are all just so doting in Goodnight Manger as they're gathering around baby Jesus, and they're so excited. They're probably a little too excited, so they're keeping him from getting to sleep because they think he's so cute and wonderful. And she she's very gifted illustrator.
Well, a wonderful, wonderful combination. And as I said, Goodnight Arc was also just delightful with the illustrations. So, now these were your first two books, or have you done?
No, these are my first two books, and before that, I've also written poetry and short stories, and so I've had some magazine pieces, but these are my first books.
Wow, that's exciting. So, you know, people always ask how did you get to such a great publisher? You found an agent?
Yes. So, so what happened is sort of like to take the back step. Before coming to writing, I was an elementary school teacher, so I was just saturated in children's books as an elementary school teacher, and I'd always loved writing. So when my kids came along, I decided to stop teaching for a while and to really delve into writing. So I actually wrote for many years before seeking an agent, because I discovered there's quite a, even though I love to write and I think have a sort of a natural inclination toward it, there's still a big learning curve and perfecting and improving and honing the skill. So I spent years, quite a few years, starting with when my kids were little. I didn't have big stretches of time, so I started with short pieces, poems and short stories. And then in about 2007, 2008, I thought, oh, you know, I think I'd like to try writing picture books. So it was then after that I built up a portfolio of picture book manuscripts, and once I had 7 or 8 that I was really happy with, then I pitched them to agents. And that really is the if you want to publish the traditional route, I have found that for me it was helpful to have an agent, because she's been able to get my story in front of the right people, in front of the right publishers, and in front of the right editors at the publishers, and that made all the difference. And I'm just so happy that Zonder Kids picked up and was interested in Goodnight Manger and Goodnight Arc, because I agree with you, they're absolutely, the books they produce are just so beautifully put together, and they're wonderful to work with.
They are top notch, and it's a wonderful you know, publisher. once you get with them, I think, you know, you have it made, because you really, you know, you really have a great support network behind you, because all of the books that come through that I get from them, I always find that they are really, really well done and carefully edited and carefully, you know, thought through. And so I was so pleased when I got your book, and I said, oh, I just I just so enjoyed it. I said I had to talk to her because, you know, so when you got your agent, was it just by sending out query letters or?
Well, I attended, one of the things that I recommend for writers is to attend your local, any local conferences. So I attended, I live in New Jersey, so I attended one of the New Jersey Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators regional conferences, their New Jersey one. And my agent was at that conference. And even though I didn't specifically get a chance to meet her there, I had that connection. And so then I sent her, yes, a query. With a pitch. What you usually do is you, different agencies have different policies, but you generally pick what you think is your strongest and pitch it to them. And then if they're interested, they say, oh, yes, I'd love to see that. And then if they're still interested, they'll say, oh, well, what else can you send along? And that's why it's good to have a little portfolio of at least five.
Well, I think it takes a really great agent, you know, to read the manuscript of a picture book without seeing the pictures. I mean, you have to have a great imagination. I've always thought it's much more difficult for an agent to, you know, you have to be really good at reading a manuscript and visualizing what it can be once you add the illustrations.
Absolutely, especially since, I mean, the art of the picture book is that, which makes it different from really any other genre, is you've got the pictures and the text work together to tell the story. So when you see the text, you really do have to have a good sense of imagination so that you can fill in and see how the pictures are going to enhance that.
Exactly. So she's very good, and I have a feeling she's worth her weight in gold because that she got you a nice publishing deal like this, and I'm sure there are going to be many, many more books coming out of you, and I'm finding inspiration all the time. And
absolutely.
Of course, when you have young kids, it's so much fun. There are so many things that you can do with them, and they open your mind to things. So
exactly, and I always make sure that I have a small notebook with me that either fits in my back pocket or my purse, so that I can capture those ideas as they come to me. And so there's never an excuse that I don't have an idea, because if I can't think of something to write, I just take out my notebook and pick something.
Oh, well, that's great. You know, I'm sure I will have you back on the show again. As I said, I wanted to fit you in before Christmas because, you know, this is the time to really push this book. And I really hope that people will go out and get it. I know it's available on Amazon. It's Good Night Manger, and by Laura Sassi, spelt with an I at the end, S-A-S-S-I, sort of like my name, P-A-T-Z-I.
All exactly.
but it's Laura Sassi, and do you have a website?
I do. I have a blog,
okay,
which rather serves as my website. It's Laura Sassi Tales, T-A-L-E-S,
okay,
at wordpress.com.
Okay, so laurasassytales@wordpress.com. I suggest...
Oh, I'm sorry, it's laurasassytales.wordpress.
Dot WordPress. Oh, yeah, dot WordPress. And I will recommend to all my listeners to go there and also to go to one of the online stores and order the book. You can still get it in time for Christmas. And
yes, absolutely.
It will be a treasured gift. I think one of the wonderful things about books is that when you give a book and you write, you know, the inscription, I know I save all the books where somebody has given me a book and they've inscribed it. I never get rid of those books. So it's wonderful. It's a wonderful gift, a wonderful Christmas gift, and one that will be treasured for years to come. So I want to thank you, Laura, for joining me. And when your next book comes out, is that soon?
Well, there will be another one. I'm not sure when. I'm not sure what the date is yet.
Okay, so. Well, I will. Let's keep in contact, and when you're ready, let's have you back on, okay?
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Have a very Merry Christmas
okay,
to you and all your listeners.
Okay, thank you so much. Thanks, Laura, for joining me today.
Yep. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Tis the season to be reading. Shopping for a gift that will touch someone's heart? There's nothing like a book. A heartwarming book for a child? A mystery for your favorite aunt? A book about military history for your dad? You can find these and hundreds of best-selling books at Haslam's at 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. It's a fantastic place to find gifts that shows you put some time and thought into it. For the cooks in your life, there are marvelous cookbooks. For those who dream of traveling, there are gorgeous books of photographs. You can find these and more at Haslam's, the best bookstore in Florida with over 300,000 books. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, located at 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. They're even open on Sundays from noon to 5.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life's struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my next guest, T. Jefferson Parker. Well, what can I say about T. Jefferson Parker except that he is a best-selling author and one of the only three people who have won three Edgar Awards for best novels. So, hi, are you there, T. Jefferson Parker?
Yes, I am, Patsy. Hello.
I love T. Jefferson Parker. I just love that name. It's so cool. But I guess I could call you Jeff. Is that okay?
Please do.
Okay. But it is a lovely name, and I know the story behind your name, and I think it's so cute. I'm thinking, what would I, if I was giving my kid one initial at the beginning, and I think T would be great because you could say terrific, right?
Yes.
Maybe that's what she was thinking about when your mom gave you T. Jefferson Parker. Did she know you were going to be a writer?
You know, that's funny you should ask, because the T, as you might know, doesn't stand for anything. It's a decorative initial that Mom and Dad put there. And many, many years after I was born, I was a teenager, I think Mom confessed to me that the reason they named me T. Jefferson Parker was because they thought the name would look good on the president's door.
The president of what? Of the United States?
The president of the United States.
The president of the
patriotic people, and that was their highest.
Well, President T. Well, you know.
They got a mystery writer instead.
Well, who knows? Listen, in today's climate, next time around, you could be running for president. there are enough of them out there. You could just join the mob, right?
Yes, I could just join the crowd.
That's it. Well, as I said, of course. For anybody who knows your name, they know, of course, that you're a best-selling author, that you've written so many books, and of course, your latest book. Well, tell us a little bit about it, because I find it very interesting for a reason. And if you tell us about it, then I'll tell you why I find it so interesting from my perspective.
Okay, yeah, happy to. My latest is called Full Measure, and it's a coming home from the Afghanistan War story. About a young man who comes back through Camp Pendleton, which is near where I live, and tries to pick up his civilian life and get back into things that civilians do. Very young man, 22 years old, graduated high school at 17, joined the Marines, and so he's known really nothing as an adult except being a warrior, a Marine, and combat. So that's the new story, and it was kind of brought on by the fact that I live here in a little town called Fallbrook, and the story takes place in Fallbrook, and Fallbrook abuts Camp Pendleton, where I saw a lot of the young Marines coming home from the war, still do, and I had to write a book about one of them.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So then you just stopped it right there. So you wrote a book about one of them, but tell us the story just basically, and then we'll talk about the research that went behind this amazing story.
Well, the story is this young man comes home. He comes from a third-generation avocado-growing farming family here in Fallbrook. Avocados is Fallbrook's one of Fallbrook's biggest industries, has been for a long time. We're very proud of that, and we call ourselves the avocado capital of the world. So Patrick comes back from the war. His father wants him to help take over the business, but unfortunately, what's happened just before Patrick's arrival home from Afghanistan is he has there's been a huge wildfire here in Fallbrook, which we had one of back in 2007, and their groves, their orchards have been destroyed. So Patrick comes home not only from bloody combat in Afghanistan, but he comes home welcomed to a family farm that has been virtually destroyed by fire, possibly arson set, and so he goes out of the frying pan and into the fire and, again, tries to pick up his pieces here of his life with combat as his education and trying to get a burned to the ground farm back up and running.
Now, you know, this book is different from most of your other books. It's not as much about a crime or as much of a mystery as it's a real deep study here of sort of the after effects of serving in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you do this research? Because it's really so detailed.
You know, Patsy, it's a good question. It's one of those things that this book was a gift to me, and I'll tell you how. I was searching around for something to write, like I always am. This is about 2010, and I noticed that a lot of new, fresh Marines were coming back from deployment. I would see them around town, you know, the Arco Station or the Albertsons Market or wherever I was. I would see them, and they had recently been, you know, come back to the United States, and I started talking to them a little bit and, you know, introducing myself and just kind of asking basic questions because I was curious about what they'd been doing. And I found out that a lot of these guys were recently returned from a place called Sangin Valley, which is in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, which at the time in 2010 was the hotbeds of Taliban activity. And so these guys deployed out of Pendleton back in early 2010 were part of the 3-5, the 3rd Battalion of the 5th Regiment of the 1st Marines. And they're a long, long, historically important battalion. They call themselves the 3-5, and their motto is, their standard is the Dark Horse Battalion. And they are awarded back have long histories all the way back to the World War I in France, a distinguished service against the Nazis. And these guys had come back and had stories to tell. And so I started listening to them and hearing them out and finding out what they'd been up to over there in Sangin Valley, and I heard some hair-raising tales. And I decided very quickly after getting to know some of these guys and going out on base a little bit that I had to write this book about one of them, kind of make a composite character who becomes Patrick. And I wanted to write about their experience and what they'd been through and what it would be like not so much to be in the war, but to come back from the war and try to pick up your life again. And so as I saw these guys out there, I thought, I have to write this book about them. And it didn't feel like a mystery. It didn't really feel like a thriller. It felt more like a study of the here and now in small-town America, which is really the way I see Fallbrook, California.
Well, as always, with your books, you really make Southern California so vivid. And, of course, Fallbrook, they must adore you. You are like the leading citizen there, right?
You know, a lot of people do know me, and I think a lot of people like the book. In some ways, I think the book is really very, you know, positive and laudatory towards Fallbrook. There areas of the book, parts of the book probably that some people don't like, but you know, most people on the street here in your little local hometown don't get in your face too bad about it so far. I think that they're liking it.
Well, at least it brings tourists to town. I'm sure there's lots of people come through and they say, oh, well, I'm in Southern California. I've got to go to Fallbrook because T. Jefferson Parker has written about it. So, you know, it's funny. Of course, reading the book, it's horrendous what our guys are going through over there. Some of it is very difficult to read. You know, I mean, when what happens over there is frightening. And was it hard for you to write some of this, to hear these stories?
Yeah, it was hard because, you know, the very first thing that hit me really hard when I started talking to these young Marines coming back was how young they are. You know, a lot of them were 17, 18 when they were deployed, you know, 19. So when they come back like a year later, they're like 20 years old, 19, you know, 21. An old guy, a sergeant's like 25, you know. So they're very, very young, and they train really, really, really hard. And they go over into a place that they very well may never come back from alive. And they know that going in. And so, you know, when you hunker down for a 9-month deployment in a place like, you know, Sangin Valley, knowing that the Taliban is all around and they've got snipers and grenades and, you know, mortars and all these wonderful weapons to kill you with, it must be very terrifying. And it's hard for a writer to put himself, I mean, it's easy for a writer to put himself into that position. You can kind of share the fear and share the anxiety and share the adrenaline of what it must be like. But, you know, can you write it? You know, can you get it on the page so that a reader feels like you have maybe understood that, or maybe even done it, make it actual for the reader? That's the hard part. I worked really, really hard on some of the scenes that dealt with combat and with, you know, what it's like to be a Marine, you know, hoping over and over that I would get it right, you know. And so I talked to a lot of guys and tried to get things right, and I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, things in there that, you know, may raise the eyebrow of some Marines, but I'm hoping that the gist of it, the heart of it, is accurate.
Well, I think with this book, of course, you've done a great job. And why I said it's interesting from my perspective is that I'm deeply involved in writing a book about India and about Afghanistan. And it's a major project for me. But my years that I'm concentrating on are 1842, the retreat from Kabul. And that's, of course, when the British were there. And, you know, reading your book, knowing my history of what happened in those days, back in 1842, nothing's changed.
you know? Funny similarities down through the centuries.
I mean, it's like the same thought process, the same thing. And the same thing about they were so young. They were so young. The British boys who went over, they went over exactly like that. They were 16, 17, and they were sent, you know, to India, and then, of course, north up to Afghanistan and to Kabul. And, of course, there was a terrible, terrible massacre up there at that time. And so that's where my sort of interest in, you know, your book was so much more interesting for me because of my interest in that period.
Yeah, it's just amazing how the players have perhaps changed a little bit, but what's going on is so reminiscent, and it echoes so loudly when you look back all the way into the 1800s. It kind of takes your breath away.
It does, it does. Now, I'm going to have to take a short break, but when I come back, I want to talk to you about your other books, about some of your series, about advice for writers, and just some other fascinating things about you. Okay?
Oh, wonderful.
We'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Tis the season to be reading. Shopping for a gift that will touch someone's heart? There's nothing like a book. A heartwarming book for a child, a mystery for your favorite aunt, a book about military history for your dad. You can find these and hundreds of best-selling books at Haslam's at 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. It's a fantastic place to find gifts that shows you put some time and thought into it. For the cooks in your life, there are marvelous cookbooks. For those who dream of traveling, there are gorgeous books of photographs. You can find these and more at Haslam's, the best bookstore in Florida with over 300,000 books. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, located at 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. They're even open on Sundays from noon to 5.
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time, sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why not you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars, old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show, GoBowlingShow.com.
Did you know there's a sprawling botanical paradise right in your own backyard? Come visit Sunken Gardens. Located at 1825 4th Street North, it's St. Petersburg's oldest living museum. This 100-year-old garden is home to some of the oldest tropical plants in the region. Unwind as you stroll through meandering paths, lush with exotic plants from around the world. Explore cascading waterfalls, beautiful demonstration gardens, and more than 50,000 tropical plants and flowers. Sunken Gardens provides garden tours, horticultural programs, special events, field trips, weddings, private or corporate rentals, and much more. Call 727-551-3102 for more information. That's 727-551-3102. Sunken Gardens, 1825 4th Street North, right in the heart of Old Northeast St. Petersburg. Call 727-551-3102.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I'm back with my guest T. Jefferson Parker, and we've been talking about his latest book, Full Measure, which is now available all over the place on Amazon and online. And but I want to also talk to Jeff here about some of his other books, because of course you're famous for all of your crime books, and sort of you pull things out of the headlines.
Yeah,
you do, and you know, you've written two that were series, and of course, I think perhaps the most famous is your Charlie Hood series.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Jaguar, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It was something that I hadn't known about when I read it, and so you know, the wonderful thing about having books online nowadays is in the old days when, you know, you sold books only through the bookstore. Once they were gone, they were gone. And so it's so nice that now people can go back and read your entire series and get your entire series.
It's nice.
It is nice. It's just wonderful. And so that's why, you know, it's every once in a while I come across a writer who I haven't read. And so I like to like start at the beginning and you know, read the series through. Now, in your case, I hadn't read all of your Hood books, but I did when I read The Jaguar. I just liked it so much. Can just talk about it for a minute, because did you pull this out of the headlines?
The Jaguar, yeah. Well, you know, partially.
Because I didn't know about... tell us what happened to this book.
Well, kind of. I mean, it's a really busy, dense, sort of action-packed book, but the core of The Jaguar is based on the fact that Mexican drug cartel kingpins have for some time been commissioning songs to be written about them in order to enhance their notoriety. And each kingpin wants to be portrayed more flamboyantly and more bravely in his song, which is called A Narco Corrido, than his rival. And so this has been going on, and they hire really, really talented songwriters sometimes to write their narco corridos. And this book, I posit that a very good, young, beautiful American songwriter is captured by a fan who happens to be a major narco trafficker down in Mexico who owns this crumbling castle down near Veracruz, and he kidnaps her stateside, and he drags her down to his castle with the idea that she is going to write for him and about him the most beautiful narco corrido ever written, or he's going to skin her alive. And that's the way the book sort of starts.
Yes, it does. It does. And it's like, okay. So, you know, of course, it's one in a series, and it's great that if people haven't read it, they can go back and read the entire series. How did you, when you started with this character, did you know you were going to write a series? Did you plan it out that way?
Yeah, I did. I talked to my agent and editor about that, and we decided to hatch a series. And I spent a little time thinking about a character who could carry a series, and I came up with Charlie Hood, who is a young man, single guy, you know, earnest, good fellow. He's brave, but he's not foolish. He's a good cop, but he's not a zealot. He's a sheriff's deputy in Los Angeles as the series opens, but he takes a job working with a task force that's run by the feds, the ATF, kind of midway through the second book, and so he becomes an ATF agent, if you will, and their mandate, as you probably know, is guns, you know, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, but guns is the big thing, especially along the U.S. border with Mexico through California and Arizona and Texas. And so Charlie's job becomes, if you will, helping to try to stem the flow of illegal guns going south from the United States into Mexico and helping to fuel the power of the cartel.
Well, you make it very realistic. You know, it's really... once you get into sort of Charlie, you really enjoy the character and the development of the stories as through the entire series. Are you working on another series, or are you going to add to this, or anything else?
Let's see, Patsy. What's on? I'm finished with a new book for next year. Next March, I'm going to publish a book called Crazy Blood, which has nothing to do with drug cartels or Charlie Hood. It's a story about it's a ski racing story. It's a story about two young men, half brothers, who compete ferociously for a spot on the U.S. Olympic ski cross team, with an eye for the 2016 Olympics. Or 18 Olympics, sorry, 2018. And so it's a ski racing story. It takes place in a small resort town, and the characters in this story, their lives, even though they're only 25 years old, one of the greatest influences on their lives is this terrible murder that took place of their father 25 years ago, and that it's a solved murder. Everybody knows who did it. Everybody knows what happened. It happened 25 years ago, but that crime continues to haunt these young people as they pursue their careers in skiing and in love and in life and in everything else. And so it's about ski racing, but it's also about the way that a crime, a terrible, dark crime, can not only buffet the people who live through it and at the time, but also, you know, ripple outward over time down into the generation. So this crime will just kind of never go away. And it's how these brothers deal with that crime, also with their love-hate relationship and their desire to be the guy on the ski team.
Well, it sounds exciting. I know I'll have you back when that comes out. But
Oh,
absolutely. Of course, writers are always asking me, one of the reasons I did this program is to help writers, to get them involved in not just the process of writing, but involved in the actual, you know, getting out there and and promoting their books. Of course, you are very, very fortunate that you, I don't know, were you rejected in the beginning at all? Or your first book, of course, came out back in, when was
1985.
It? 1985. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great year. That's the year my son was born. So,
oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so it came out, and of course it turned into a New York Times bestseller.
It was a bestseller, and it was made into an HBO movie back in the day. And so, yeah, it was a fantastic success. It did well, and it really put me on the map, and it allowed me to...
And, of course, that's Laguna Heat. Laguna Heat, which
Laguna Heat, right.
many people saw. I think it's rerun every once in a while.
Yeah, they still show it now.
Oh, yeah, they still show it. And, so was that... Of course, you had been a journalist before that, right? And so you knew how to find an agent.
I did. I did. I knew how to find an agent, and I lucked into one because a friend introduced me to his agent. He was a successful writer, and so it was made easy for me by that. And that first book, Laguna Heat, was something that changed my life and set me on the course that I'm still on today, 21, almost 22 books later.
Wow. And they'll keep coming, I know. So when you work on a book, you come out with the idea, and then are you the kind who plots it out on cards, or how do you set out your plotting sort of mechanism? Do you work through? Are you an outliner?
You know, sort of, yeah. I am an outliner, especially when the publishers demand an outline, you know?
Yeah.
Then I definitely write an outline. I have also worked from no outline. I wrote once all of maybe 6 words on a bar napkin once, and I gave that to my editor telling him that this is what my next book is going to be about. And he looked at me sort of tragically, you know, that my outline was on a bar napkin. And a week later, my agent called. She said, "Jeff, I don't know what you wrote on that napkin, but I sold it." So she actually got me a book deal based on that napkin with 6 words on it. But on the other hand, I've written I wrote an outline once for a book called Silent Joe that was a 90-page outline, single spaced. So it was like almost a novella. It was so long. And you know, when I got stuck in that book a few months later and the draft sort of fell apart on me, I went to that outline and I saw what I had outlined and what I had written, and it solved the problem for me. So that outline, in that case, really came in handy. So, you know, I try to figure out as much as I can ahead of time, but novels are tough. I mean, you know this. I mean, they're long, they're 500-plus pages, whatever. It's very, very difficult to see from the beginning how that ending is going to work and how it's going to resolve and even what you might want to have happen. So I try to figure out as much as I can, you know, what condition are my characters going to be in? Who's going to be left standing? What's going to happen to them? And then I try to find a way to get there. And I always try to, you know, keep an open mind, and maybe I'll think of something better or more interesting.
Well, yeah,
more
because sometimes characters take on a life of their own, and you don't know, suddenly they want to do something, and you have to go along with them.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, and they're always right. I mean, as soon as you superimpose your will as an author onto your characters, because you're trying to make that character do something that you want to see, you're making a mistake, and that character will go flat, and that scene will die, and the whole book might die, because you can't make a character operate according to your own conveniences.
Well, you know, your books are, how can I say, I don't like to say they're masculine books, but they're not fluffy books. You know,
no,
they're hard-hitting books, and of course they deal a lot, as I said, with, of course, crime and sort of the sordid side of life. Do you ever, like, want to write a fluffy book?
You know, fluffy book.
I don't know. You know, it's you deal a lot with evil. Does it sometimes get to you? I mean, like, just in Full Measure, there's so much awfulness and so much, I don't know, corruption and stuff. Of course, it'll keep you busy forever.
It's a story in a way. I know what you mean. You know, I'm not headed towards fluff, probably, but I do think, and I've always tried to say in my books, to portray in my books, that love between people is really, really, really important. and it sort of, you know, makes life worth it. And in my books, there's almost always some kind of a spiritual quest, even if it's gone south, gone bad, it's still a quest. And so I think that there's good optimism in the books, and I think that Full Measure, in spite of being about, you know, a combat soldier coming home and a terribly troubled, you know, brother and a community that has a darker side, I think there's a real nice sense of optimism and possibility in young Patrick's life. He's 22, and he does, at the end of the book, sort of get his dream. He gets his dream job. He's got his little boat, and he's going to guide fishermen on the bay in San Diego. He's going to be a fisherman and a captain. And so that book ends positively to me, and I hope that people of Patrick's generation, you know, young 20s, especially guys, you know, men and women who've come back from the war or combat, see in that book and in him the possibility that things can be good and can be great. You know, this is not a story about, you know, a combat vet crippled by PTSD. This is about a combat vet who's haunted, who takes that haunting and moves on into the next phase of his life. And I'm hoping that that's what a lot of people of his generation can do, and I hope that's what our country can do as we if we, you know, ever sort of bring these wars to an end.
That's exactly it. But, of course, having been back in 1842 with my book, I sometimes wonder if that will ever happen.
Yeah, there you go. The perspective doesn't make it look like a great bet.
No, but we do have to hope that our vets can get help, get more help, and feel encouraged exactly by your book and by other books. I know that I try to encourage vets that, you know, sometimes I will talk to a veteran and they'll they want to know, you know, if they should write. And I say, you know, you don't have to write about what you went through. You don't have to write about that. I mean, if you want to and it's cathartic, do it. But you could write a cookbook. You could write, you know, a book about fishing. You could write a book about, which, by the way, I understand you like to fish, right?
I do. And I totally agree with you. That's what I tell veterans that I talk to. You know, please write about the war if you want. But if you want to write a cookbook or a book about fishing, do that too, because we need your voice more than anything. And what you write about is up to you.
Exactly. Trout fisher? Are you a trout fisherman?
Yeah, and I like ocean fishing too. Anything.
I'm from Northern Michigan. I'm a Youper. it's funny. My closest encounter with Southern California are your books.
Because, oh wow!
Yeah,
wow.
I'm. Although I'm now in Florida, but I'm from, you know, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and of course, we're trout fishers.
That's, yeah, you are.
That's all we like to do. We can. Any excuse to be out there, and of course we have the best trout, so you know, if you ever want really good trout fishing, you have to go up north, and there you fish, and you take your frying pan and you fry it right there on the side of the river and the lake, and there you're a happy camper.
Oh, that sounds great.
It does. So I just, you know, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I know that, you know, I ask always writers, what do they tell other writers? But it's always the same thing. I think, you know, in the end, it's the same thing. If you want to be a good writer, you have to read. You have to read well. You have to read.
Yeah, I so agree with that. That's so true.
You know, you have to read really, you know, have a nice foundation in so that you have that as a resource in the back of your mind.
Yeah, and of course, it's your nutrition, and it's your food, and it's your vitamins. That's what goes into you.
Exactly. And anyone who wants to be a crime writer has to read T. Jefferson Parker, because T. Jefferson Parker, which I never get tired of saying that name. You know, I don't know. Does your wife go around and say, T. Jefferson Parker?
She's long over that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think she should just go around and say that all day. That's funny. I think it's cute. And because it is a terrific name for you. And so I want to thank you for joining me today. Now, you have a website. What is your website that people can go to?
Oh, yeah, tjeffersonparker.com, you bet. And you know, I've got some Twitter stuff going and a Facebook page and all. So please join me any way you feel like. I'm available, and And always like talking to up-and-coming writers and readers and whomever.
Okay, so that's a good deal. So go to T. Jefferson Parker's website and get in contact with him. And at the same time, you can see some of his other books that you might not have seen, and then you can order them because he has some terrific books out there that, you know, going back, all the way back to 1985. So I want to thank you so much for joining me, and I look forward to having you on the program when your next book comes out.
Well, thank you, Patsy. This was a pleasure, and let's do it again.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you so much. It was lots of fun.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Why, that was nice. I really enjoyed that. You know, he is a writer who really knows what he's doing when it comes to crime fiction. So if you're interested in sort of a hard and fast book to read, you will enjoy T. Jefferson Parker's books. Now, I want to thank everyone for joining me today. I would highly recommend, if you're looking for a book, looking for a gift, if T. Jefferson Parker's book or any other book, visit Haslam's Bookstore in downtown St. Petersburg. It's a sort of a St. Petersburg tradition, and one that you will really enjoy visiting there. They have fantastic books, not just new books, but also used books. So whatever you're interested in, and whatever any relative or friend that you have are interested in. I just heard a survey this morning that, Ed, are you in the control room? You know, there was just a survey on, and they were saying that people don't know where any place is. I mean, they don't know where the Grand Canyon is. They don't know where Niagara Falls is. They don't know where things are located. And so do you like to get photo books, Ed? Do you like photo books?
Yeah, well, we used to have a thing called a globe, but for some reason it's disappeared, but books are the best thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You know, if you listen to this survey, it's amazing that, well, I mean, we were just talking about Afghanistan. Can you find Afghanistan? If you don't have a globe, go to Haslam's Bookstore and get a book about geography, because there you will be able to find where all of these places are. Because I was so surprised when people were asked, where are the Grand Canyon? And they didn't know. They didn't know at all. So just get yourself a book. Go down to Haslam's. And this is Patsy with a Z, wishing you a great week. And I want to thank Big Ed in the control room. And remember, one of the joys in life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. Join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. Have a great week. Bye.